Okay, ready? Everybody settle and action.
Warning, Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended,
you're one ugly motherfucker.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, that's great. This is fucking great, man.
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It doesn't even
have to be cold. Most becoming
night.
Most.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Do I look at you or the camera?
You'll just look right at me. You'll just ignore the camera.
Okay.
There are a lot of people saying you could be the next great quarterback. I can already see it now.
Cam running down a tunnel with crowd chanting his name.
I hear you've been invited to train with legend Isaiah White himself. Care to elaborate?
I want to be the goat.
Who are they?
Just going to toss the ball around a little. You want to hit this?
You can't handle it.
I understand. Too slow.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Critique Revolve. I am your host, Thomas Cowley, and joined with me, as usual, is Michael Flores.
Hello.
And we're talking about the fall's first-ish, not really, kind of, sort of, Halloween-themed movie following Weapons and The Conjuring, what, 4, I think, at this point, with the new IP, Him. The movie featuring the concept of, it's a supernatural psychological sports horror film, which is a mouthful in itself, directed by Justin Tipping and co-written by Skip Bronchi, Zach Akers, and Tipping himself. And this is what was kind of marketed as being a Jordan Peele-esque movie from the producer Jordan Peele, the same way that Man of Steel was marketed as produced by Chris Nolan, which I think historically does more damning for your movie than anything else. For anybody who pays attention to pattern recognition, if your name on it is a producer, but you're not the creator, I feel like that's a mark of a handicap.
Well, yes and no. Sometimes it's the mark of a protege and a mentor.
Occasionally.
Tarantino did that with Eli Roth. Rodriguez did it with a few other directors as well. It's not always the case. However, I also would add that Jordan Peele in today's climate is not the Jordan Peele he was when Get Out came out.
Correct.
He's starting to look a little bit like M. Night.
Well, that was our last discussion. Well, maybe it wasn't a discussion with that. I think that might have been one of our often referenced phone calls that we were talking about Nope. And I had said how he is teetering on the brink of an M. Night Shyamalan career because he's had one stellar success and then a middling success and then a question mark. And the trend is not going the way it should for somebody who has such a interesting and potentially bright future to be going down a path that seems to be less and less return of investment for us as fans. Now, I do think I think movies with the produced by someone famous but not made by is kind of like coughing. It may not mean bad news, but it's certainly a sign when there is bad news.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I can agree with that.
And that's kind of, I think, the theme of today's discussion. We saw this just the other day, and it is another movie in the line of that kind of, as it says, psychological horror, where it delves into the human psyche of what is a person willing to do? What is a person willing to sacrifice? How far will you go for fame, success, notoriety, money, power, whatever the carrot on the end of the stick is for the donkey? There's a lot of movies about that. And I think that this is trying to be something in the same lines, but I'm not certain, And when I say that, I mean, I am definitely certain it doesn't quite make it there. Now, him, I would say it starts out far more promising in some ways, but let's get into who's the cast here. We have Marlon Wayans, who is the Isaiah White, the legendary quarterback and mentor figure for Cameron Cade, played by Tyreek Withers. Now, I will say these two have a good relationship, a good chemistry. I thought the acting from them was very, very well done. Marlon Wayans surprised me. I don't know about you. I hadn't seen him in quite some time.
He's become the serious actor.
He has. He's at that stage in his career.
Yeah, he was recently in a Sofia Coppola film, and he did well in that. It was a very low-key role, but convincing. And that's kind of when I start taking notice and looking at his body of work. I'm like, oh, look at Marlon Wayans taking the serious approach in his career.
Yeah, he was in Air just the other year, 2 years ago.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, but I you know, I still remember the days of Scary Movie 1 and 2, you know.
Well, still, when I look at him, I laugh sometimes because his face shouldn't be funny because it's not a funny face. But because...
He's memorized with a memory of that character.
Right, so every time I see his face, I'm waiting for a joke.
Or what is it? Don't Be a Menace? That one with the gun on the
while
poster?
Drinky Juice in the Hood.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, that's the full title, isn't it? Like, he started in comedy, and he's had a hard time trying, I think, break out of that, as most people do. But I will say his dramatic performance in this, or something different than I had seen him in quite some time, was very convincing.
As yeah, he was very good.
He was, I would say, the best part. And that's not to necessarily take away from Tyreek Withers, who plays Cam, essentially our protagonist. But Marlon Wayans' portrayal as the greatest of all time mentor figure is just, he gets the best scenes. He gets the juiciest dialogue, the best bits to play off of.
There's enough crazy in his face.
He sells
it. Works for the role because he kind of is a... I mean, there are going to be spoilers because you can't have a discussion about right. a show like this without spoilers. He's essentially Satan's broker. You know what? Yes, let's just keep it at that for the time
yeah.
being.
Well, so the whole point of this movie is Cameron's on the rise as destined as a football glory until he is attacked by an obsessed fan threatening to end his career before it even began. Just as hope fades, his idol, legendary quarterback Isaiah White, invites him to train at his private compound. But what starts as the opportunity of a lifetime soon twists into something far more dangerous.
Now, I want to say before we get into the meat of this mm-hmm. discussion, symptomatically, this movie represents not merely the exploitation of youth athletes for the financial success and glory of a privileged class, but also the Faustian bargains, I guess you can say, and identity sacrifices demanded by the pursuit of greatness, which was also a very solid theme that was brought to the forefront. And it used the idea of faith and idolization, the cost of mm-hmm. bodily and mental trauma, and of course, the seductive promise of legacy. So that, I would say, is largely or more broadly what the movie's about.
Well, and that's where the trailer sells it, that it is going to be another movie a la Whiplash, or more accurately, I would say, Black Swan, the 2010 film with Natalie Portman, in which somebody pushes themselves to be the greatest at a severe psychological toll. And with the trailer and what is presented in the first portion of two-thirds of this movie, I'd say, it does very much bring to light. It brings a lot of things to the table. It brings these concepts. It brings these little moments. It has a few beats that really kind of work for what it's trying to say. But then I think it doesn't do anything with all of this. It's the equivalent to me of bringing a lot of ingredients together to bake a cake. And individually, these ingredients serve fine. But the sum of its parts and what was ultimately made was not satisfying.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens with a movie that is being directed by someone that doesn't have the experience to mm-hmm. handle such a large project. Because, as you mentioned, lots of ingredients. And those ingredients are good. There's a lot of really interesting aspects that they bring to this movie that if this was a TV show and they isolated like via an anthology style on different elements of the lore and myth they introduce, I would say you got yourself a solid TV show. But you have a movie here that's, I think, barely 90 minutes, maybe a little over 90 minutes in length. And they jam it with
96.
Yeah, they jam it with so many esoteric occult ideas, and they don't quite mesh because it feels like he was pulling from a grab bag of different occult ideas, and none of it quite adhere. And I think ultimately that's probably the problem that you have with this movie, as well as myself. And that's why I feel like the perfect way to describe the movie is this idea of a bunch of ingredients, but the person putting together this ingredient, these ingredients for the cake, don't know how to actually make the cake.
Correct. That is, I think, the best way to describe this movie, unfortunately, because it does seem to be in the hands of people who are new to the scene, newer. This is the sophomore effort from director Justin Tipping as far as feature films go. Prior to this was a independent movie, Kix, that was also, it was 87 minutes. It was $10 million budget. It didn't even break $200,000 at the box office. So
is he mostly a television director?
He is mostly a television director. He's done a lot more TV than he has done. He's got two films, and then he's been doing TV episodes, anywhere between 2 and 4 episodes for the specific shows since 2018.
Some of the TV shows he's directed: The Chi, Dear White People, Dare Me, Black Monday. So that should kind of tell people a little bit about the ideology of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's geared around cultural inequities.
Yeah.
Abuse. And while that
does play a role in this, it's again an example of where I think you brought this to the table.
Now, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do with it? And I think there's a misnomer here that an idea is a story. And that's not
true. It's
not. If you ask a lot of amateur writers, it is.
I thought once you come up with an elevator pitch, it's done. I thought that was all you have to do. Yeah.
These aren't the days of Netflix's heyday anymore where you green light everything.
But I thought because of, you know, the advent of ChatGPT, you can just punch in your elevator pitch and then just say, hey, write a movie based on this pitch.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go kill myself.
That doesn't work.
No. And this is an example of what happens. This movie is a lot more style over substance, I would say. In my personal opinion, there's some great visual effects with certain things that are very effective in the moments that they're used.
The lighting is very well done. And I separate lighting. Usually I don't separate lighting for cinematography.
You kind of have to.
But in this case, this is one of the things that you and I talked about when we walked out of the theater, was not being very wowed by the cinematography, because typically when you're dealing with a movie that's steeped in metaphor and allegory, symbolism, occult iconography, well, your framing and your cinematography is usually the thing that you use the most to really bring that out. That's your
storytelling piece.
And unfortunately, the camera work itself was pretty rudimentary, but the lighting, there was a lot of attention placed on the actual lighting itself. But when it comes to lens choices and angles and camera framing, I don't feel like there was much innovation there.
No. And this is one of those, I think this is going to sound really mean, I think, in some respects, but I do stand by this observation. This feels like kind of the first wave, or what I can imagine filmmaking will kind of become as more millennials and Gen Z enter into the people who are making the films, and the boomer Gen X kind of fade, whether because they don't get work anymore or simply they pass away. Because what used to be cinematography, framing a shot, storytelling through the tools that you have within the frame, the borders of the frame, where you set things, what your lighting's like, the blocking, all of these are tactics that were tried and true from back in the day. And I think, like many things we're seeing today, the people, the next wave, the next generation, are not taught these things by any mentors taking anybody under their wings, nor are they rabid fans like Scorsese was or Tarantino was of what came before to really understand what came before and why certain things were done. Instead, this is to me the first, not maybe not the first, but a great example of the mimicry element of filmmaking, where it is somebody who only has grown up with digital, who has shot 100 million scenes as, I want to say, Herzog. What's his first name? Walter? He was in A Mandalorian. He's the director. Walter Herzog. He's talked about that he's seen terrible behavior in younger filmmakers where they take 600 takes of something or just are constantly filming 600 hours of footage, whereas he knows exactly what he wants within the frame to tell his story. Warner, thank you. This feels like someone who's just grabbed a camera because they know how video is made because you grew up with one in your pocket and you just filmed everything as it happened. You didn't have to take time to agonizingly set up a shot to tell a story. You just grabbed a camera and said, I'm telling a story. And it's that idea of you kind of know what to do, but not why we do it. And I think that lost art is starting to show in the filmmaking world we see today.
I agree with mostly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It's hard to disagree that with the transition between analog to digital, there hasn't been something lost when it comes to the visual side of filmmaking.
The fact of film being a limited resource back in the day and how much film you had determined setting up your shots properly and understanding what you're capturing in every moment is important.
You couldn't just leave the camera running indefinitely in hopes that you're going to get the right shot.
Yeah.
And also, digital has made it easier to create less elaborate framing. And that could, as you were saying, pertaining to particular younger individuals coming up in the film game, that could actually be a detriment to their own craft in honing their skills because they don't understand what it really means to get an exposure through analog means.
You can fix or cheat it.
Yeah.
A lot easier than you used to be able to.
Yeah.
And while I think we've seen a lot of the downfall in the quality of writing over the years, I think we haven't seen as much in the directing and cinematography element, but I think we're starting to see more of it because a lot of the beginning part of the movie, I kind of was nauseous with the amount of really close, really busy elements that didn't tell a story. You were just watching events. And again, it feels like when you were watching, if you were to watch someone record something at a party kind of thing, rather than a film that is trying to tell some story.
I do feel like some of those early camera movements and blocking choices probably was designed to feel a little invasive just because of the nature of the story itself. The fact that you are being invaded of sorts, your autonomy is being threatened, you know, you're being mm-hmm. taunted, you're but not again, quite sure what's
it
real.
It doesn't quite, and maybe it's just me, it doesn't quite sell it to me. Again, it feels like you know what you're trying to do, but you don't know how to sell that correctly. Whereas other movies, especially being a psychological horror, do a good job of building tension and building up that claustrophobic vibe or that threatening vibe or that invasion feeling. Whereas I feel like this just went for a busyness and that more manic behavior and more is an equivalent to those tension building blocks. And maybe that's just my personal taste on it.
Your characterization isn't off. Like it is very busy. Mm-hmm. It's very in your face. But whether or not that's a good or a bad, I think would be determined by the audience themselves. I think that's more
fair.
That aspect, I think, out of everything you're saying is possibly more subjective.
And I'm acknowledging that,
but
yeah.
But I can't disagree.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is that, like we said, the lighting is really good because there's some special effects that they do that are really interesting. I hadn't seen a lot of. You'd see something more like in a music video or smaller things that I thought were really interesting with the X-ray of the characters and like the heat signature element.
Yeah, but why?
But again, that was a stylistic choice without a narrative purpose.
There's a lot of choices that the director went with in terms of style and form and left me scratching my head wondering why he chose to do that. And that's saying quite a lot coming from me, Thomas, because if anyone on this network has an expertise, we all have our own specialization. Mine is on the interpretation of metaphor and allegory, visual poetics. And I'm here wondering, I'm usually the one that will give you guys certain answers, whether you agree with it or not, is on you. But I'll explain exactly what's going on. And there are times during this movie where I can understand what they're attempting to do, but my interpretation is telling me that you don't quite understand the things you're working with, the myths, the symbols, the messages, the themes. They're not quite gelling because it's a smorgasbord of myth and occult ideas that don't quite work together.
Right. And this is probably a damning example in some respects. You and I, without getting into spoilers, we'll save that for a spoiler section, knew what was going to be happening early on in the film. Just simply because of what we've watched, our background, the clues that are there. I had a friend who was at this screening that I ran into who had no idea what was happening on that front until the major reveals.
Meaning the ending?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're like, they had no idea that was coming kind of thing.
Well, that's interesting then.
But I don't think that's because it was a well-crafted subversion of expectations. I think it was because it was a mess.
Yeah, there were a lot of groans in the theater.
There was a lot of confused people leaving that theater.
Usually people keep their groans to themselves because they don't want to be known as the idiot that didn't understand the movie. Especially when you're dealing with critics.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to be the ones like, huh? And almost...
Dude, everyone.
People were confused.
A lot of people were like, eh, it didn't... I don't know, it didn't really work for me.
Not because it's some excellent... avant-garde piece that's experimental that needs a type of
this isn't French New Wave.
Yeah.
it's just not, you know, and I think that's the thing is like without getting into too much spoilers, there's a lot of, as you said, imagery that if I were to ask the average person, what is some imagery of religion or what is some imagery of the occult that you could give me without Google searching it? And they just threw out a handful of things. That is essentially the equivalent of what was put into this film. It feels so much that everything that's there is very surface level. And it thinks it's incredibly deep. But when you actually ask or look beyond the surface, you say, okay, what are you doing with that? What is the story element? How is this symbolizing your greater narrative as a whole? That's where I said earlier, there's an idea and there's a story. And this movie has a lot of ideas with imagery that it doesn't understand and doesn't tell a story. Not really. It tells a series of events, but that's the biggest struggle of streaming that we've had on conversations here, where there's a lot of this happens, then this happens, then this happens. That's a series of events. That's not a because and therefore, but this happens, therefore this happens, but this happens. Series of deciding events and decision making.
No, I definitely agree with you because I was looking for the mythological through line for this.
And it's
like, what is the bedrock of myth that your movie is built on so that we can kind of understand? Because once you understand that, then everything else comes from that, like themes, allegory, like, oh, that makes sense. Oh, I get what you're doing there. Mm-hmm. But with a movie like this, seemingly they were implying that all of this had started because of the exploitation of Native Americans during the early years of football. Okay. Mm-hmm. They even show an image of a football player who's a Native American standing in front of skulls. So we then can surmise that, oh, so he's the start of all this. There's possibly indigenous myth
connections or
being mixed in with this. Mm-hmm. But then you have Christian symbolism that don't work with indigenous myth and lore. You have moments where they're alluding to Cade, which is the protagonist, as being a messianic figure.
Yeah. Why?
Because he's being taunted by demons and devils, perhaps.
But there was no element of...
shows a fundamental misunderstanding of what this director is actually working within.
And that's one of those things, like, people might know that Jesus was tempted by the devil in the desert, but they don't But this movie, with that kind of surface level knowledge, doesn't understand the fact that Jesus rebukes the devil and how he goes through that and what that is supposed to mean on a greater metaphorical level. Because this doesn't have any of that. It just knows there was a desert and temptation. Move on. And that's the thing, is that it wants to be a black swan. It wants to be Rosemary's Baby. It wants to be Whiplash, but is not. When those are deep pools, this is a dish plate. It just doesn't have the substance to pull together all of these ingredients, despite how good they may be. Now, the first part of the movie feels very much like it's leaning into more of the real world trauma and sacrifice, and again, kind of like Whiplash vibe. And the latter part is more into the
social messaging, you would say.
Social messaging, but also thinking it's trying to do a Rosemary's Baby, but yeah. Doesn't really know how those two things are going to mesh. So they just said, fuck it.
So do you think the social commentary, which came clearly to the forefront in the waning minutes, and just so if it wasn't clear at the beginning of the movie when I gave everyone the symptomatic meaning, essentially what they're saying by the end of the movie is that young black football players are exploited by white business owners to their detriment so that the white business owners can benefit,
continue their
wealth,
yeah,
prestige, glory,
living.
And the only way to deal with them is to murder them.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right type of social commentary that we need at this moment.
Well, I think it's as precise and refined as a brick.
Like, yeah.
It is not this subtle storytelling element. It's not leaving us to decide. It's not saying anything beyond, let's just take a bat and kill everybody kind of thing. Okay, that's all you have? Like, that's not, again, that's an idea, not a story. You can have an idea about a black football player, young and impressionable, being tempted into selling their soul metaphorically or in reality for glory, and what is that actually getting them and who is it actually benefiting, and go down a story about that. But this just said what I said the first sentence and left it there. And again, that's, you have an idea, you don't have a plot. And when you look at the script, which is, if you were going to talk expertise, maybe my expertise of my anal retentive ability to point out problems, there are so many elements of the script and the narrative that don't either pan out to anything, are red herrings entirely, are complete dead ends. And then when it finally moves towards something that it's trying to say, drops everything and goes breakneck for the end credits.
Yeah.
And again, that's where it's like the subtlety and grace of a brick flying through the air.
Yeah.
So.
And you are right about it being, you know, breakneck speeds.
Yeah.
Towards the ending, because most of the movie you're sitting wondering.
I was bored a lot of it.
Yeah, I wasn't as bored because I have patience for these types of films. If I'm going to do my due diligence and be patient to see what you have planned, and your movie drags and it's only 96 minutes.
But that's the thing. Like, you may have patience for this, but, and that's where
my patience is warranted if there's a good payoff. And I felt like ultimately the payoff was a horror film payoff, and that might deliver to horror fans. But in terms of narrative payoff,
and that's where, if we were teachers in school, like, different kids would want different one of us to grade their paper.
Yeah.
Because if they pulled it out at the end, you'd give them the marks. Whereas I'd say, you bored me for 2/3.
Well, they would have to work for it.
No, I know. But I'm like, for me, I'm like, you can't have a satisfying ending, but be boring up until then.
Yeah.
And that's where my points off come from, because a good horror movie, something like Black Swan or Rosemary's Baby, builds the tension to a crescendo. Not it's a flat line with a couple blips here and there, and then straight up at a 90 degree angle. And that's what this felt like. So,
which is weird. Tom, it is. Which is weird because this movie, as you mentioned at the top of the show, there is a lot of ingredients. There is so much here that the movie shouldn't have been, to use your words, as boring as it was, mm-hmm. because there is so much there. And for there to be so much there, and then you end your movie as simply as you did at 96 minutes.
It's a shame. It's such a waste of an idea.
Because there are good ideas here. Because, you know, everything isn't framed purely as institutional mm-hmm. or material exploitation. There's right. also the supernatural, as we've been discussing, the psychological, the yeah. horror dimensions. You have the idea of moral compromise. Well,
and hero
right?
worship and obsession from other people who, you know,
the fear of disappointment,
the fear of irrelevance,
the weight of familial pressure,
yeah,
and expectation, you know, from parents and what they expect, well,
and the
from
media you. And yourself and your fans.
All of those ingredients are actually really interesting to me. Those are good mm-hmm. things that both of us yes. actually like in movies.
And they wasted all of it on this kind of haphazard end product. And that's where the real shame is, because I think that in the hands of better script writers,
I think if Jordan Peele actually directed this, it probably would have been better.
Despite his problems of late, this, I think he could have done a much stronger job, or at least he would have executed on many of the things that we're griping about. Maybe not all of them, and maybe he still wouldn't have had the satisfying ending because, you know, Us didn't really have that either. But that paid off in a lot of other ways as far as the tension and the atmosphere and the brooding nature of what that movie was.
Despite Jordan Peele's issues and some of his later movies, there is no denying that he is an expert director. Like, he is an expert talent. He's just making choices that feel more about him and less about the audience. And when you're a commercial director, which he is, whether he wants to be or not, he is a commercial director. He should be making movies for the audience and less for his own subjective
desires.
You know
what it is.
Does that make sense?
Yes, because it's the same conversation we had.
Self-indulgence.
About Ari Aster with Eddington.
Yeah.
This is, just because you're a director doesn't mean you should write. And just because you have a good script for Get Out means you should write all of yours. Not everyone's Tarantino, not everyone's M. Night, and nor should you want to be. And that's one of those things where Ari Aster's Eddington kind of felt like, dude, you kind of did this for yourself. And when his dad said, maybe don't write your next one, this kind of feels like a similar thing with this script. Take Jordan Peele out of it. Like, this should have been by somebody who had a better understanding of things or more of a polish. Like, this needed another pass before it was ready. This souffle collapsed on itself.
Yeah, and I think that's what annoys me the most about this movie.
Yeah.
Is that there's no reason why it needed to be as empty as it ended up
that's
feeling.
That's a good example. That's a good word.
It's almost like the director himself sold the soul of his movie in order to make the movie.
Now it's gone meta.
You get what I'm saying?
Yes,
though?
I do, actually, 100%. So you want to do a quick review, like give us your grade and then get into a little bit of spoilers, because there's a few things I want to talk about in that. So what would you give this movie overall?
I would say it's a 70 to 71%. You know, 71%. I do not think it's a bad movie. I do think people, if they're into these types of films that rely heavily on symbolism and metaphor, then you probably will enjoy this. If you like movies that are more straightforward, then you're not going to like this. Because even though it may not have been overly confusing to you and I, Thomas, that's not because we're in some special, you know, level of intelligence. It just means
this is
what we do. Average moviegoers are not going to fully understand what they just watched.
Yeah. And again, I think it's not because it thinks it's smarter than it is.
There you go.
But as a result, it's confused. You know that person at the corporate office who talks a lot of bullshit and everyone just kind of nods along, but then you're sitting there and you're like, you said nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what this movie is. Some people will act like it's really deep because they're going to not want to look foolish. most people are going to just be confused and be like, was that anything? What am I missing? And feel kind of silly, but they're right in feeling that way because it doesn't have the substance. And then there's people who have seen a lot of movies, have seen a lot of this kind of thing, and are going to sit here like we're saying is, you started, but you didn't finish. You didn't give us an end product that was satisfying.
It didn't make us come.
Exactly. And how disappointing is that? Yeah, especially after 96 minutes.
Ask Ryan.
All right. So for me, I would give this one, I'd give this one a 62 because I think that it needs.
You said that like you're so proud of yourself.
I was battling between 60 and 65. I would say this is like a 62, 63 maybe because.
So you didn't hate it then.
I didn't hate it, but there's a lot about it. I know the
grades that you give when you hate something. Yes.
There's a lot about it that I'm like, this could have been so much better. This needs a second pass. I'm more disappointed. It left
us wanting.
I'm more disappointed than I am mad about this movie.
Yeah.
I didn't hate my time with it necessarily, but there is a lot of confusion and ultimately it doesn't pay off. And it's one of those, I don't know that I'd recommend it to anybody who's not interested in A, football, B, psychological horror of any kind. If you don't have one, ideally both of those, it's not the movie for you.
Also, just because we have to, politically speaking, do you think this movie is going to resonate in this moment?
This movie
in
this is cultural going to moment? Be forgotten. And that's another reason I give it a lower score. This movie will not be remembered beyond 3 months from now.
Yeah.
I just, think it just, it's not timing. Strong enough and it came out at a bad time and expected a different political election.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
To win. If this came out 2 or 3 years prior, maybe it would have done better.
And perhaps we're reading into the racial elements a little more than the average viewer.
Perhaps.
Maybe they won't pick up on it. But I mean, when you have seven demons pretty who are fucking all obvious. White.
In, you know, come on. So.
And the two people they exploit, or the three people that we know of, are one is an indigenous person.
And the other two are black. Two
black men. And, well...
I mean, come on.
The message is pretty clear.
And, there's literally a succubus.
And if you take into account just the ongoing discourse about football and its violence over the last, what, decade and a half or so?
Oh, well, yeah. Well,
that they've been talking about this and how there has to be more programs for the black youth that go in so they can understand what it means to play football for 4 years. They can't do anything else because they have, you know, physical and...
The physical ailments, the concussions and brain trauma, damage, the anybody who goes into a major sport, you're basically sacrificing a lot of your future for a chance at the present.
And most people in football play what, maybe 5 years?
I think something like that. I don't know the average. Yeah. So is it worth it? You know, but with that, that's going to be our major review for this episode. We're going to take a slight break and then we're going to get into some spoilers because there's more to talk about that. I don't want to ruin it for everybody. All right, so this is the spoiler section, and it's one of those things where, as we talked about earlier, this movie has a lot of stuff with the occult, a lot of sell your soul to the devil for power, wealth, and fame, but it doesn't ultimately execute on this. I mean, this is a prime example of something Mike and I have talked about time and time again, which is the mimicry without understanding that is currently plaguing the art form of film and TV, which we see even with the poster of this movie. The poster of him that you can currently see on IMDb is straight up a ripoff of the 97 film The Devil's Advocate with Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino, which is, again, the devil making you an offer for greater power and everything you want. But when I sat and thought about this movie more, the more I thought about the events, the more I realized that didn't go anywhere. How the fuck did that happen? So this was a dead end. That makes me dislike the script even more. And it's one of those things, as we sat down, I said to Mike, look, there's three writers. That's not a good sign. You know what happened? But there's so many little things, like there's a bit of like a Donnie Darko element to the early beginning part of the movie with the apparent apparition of his assailant that is never talked about in a legal sense. This movie is both like half surreal and half real world, and it doesn't work for either as a result. Something like The Substance, in which the world is completely surreal, where the executives of the movie production, TV production studio are caricatures. The hallways are elongated. The posters are just generic, you know, movie, hot girl kind of thing.
See, so really quick, for mm-hmm. people that weren't quite sure what I was talking about the use of camera frames and angles, The Substance is a perfect movie.
Yes.
That uses camera angles, camera lens choice to shape their narrative and tell a parallel story.
Yeah. And this has an element of wanting that surreal to be able to get away with certain things. But then it claims to be in the real world, which breaks the immersion of reality. We have a star athlete about to head to the, what is essentially the camp, you know, before you get drafted, gets assaulted with a blunt object to the head. And it's just like, yeah, he got hurt. Well, his career might be over before it started. There's no discussion of an investigation. There's no discussion of how the fuck he ended up there. That head injury completely ends up not mattering again in the fucking slightest.
Do you think that the individual who hit him in the head was actually a part of the diabolical group?
Yes, they said that.
Oh, they did.
They said that. See, in the that. End, they're okay. yelling it as he's making a decision.
Oh, okay.
They say, we attacked you so we could get you isolated and alone.
First of all,
it's like, if you have groomed this kid to be this star athlete since he was a child, why in fuck would you take the chance of killing or destroying his ability to play by hitting him in the fucking head?
Probably to physically compromise him.
Couldn't you simply have Isaiah say, I want you to come to my camp for a week?
Which would have made more sense.
Which he would have done in a heartbeat.
Because he idolized Isaiah.
He idolizes him. His dad idolized him. He saw him since he was 11. It's stupid as hell. And there's a lot of scenes and little moments that make us think this head injury is going to get worse and worse until it kills him, sort of thing. And then ultimately, it never matters. It doesn't hinder him in the slightest. He gets hit in the head a lot. He gets his head smashed against walls. Doesn't affect him in the slightest. Nor his cognitive ability. Nor is it shown that this is some sort of fever dream a la Pan's Labyrinth.
Was the blood that they were injecting him with, was that supposed to
It's supposed make him to be stronger, Isaiah's though, blood. Right? But that's the thing. It's not exactly clear. Something like a Rosemary's Baby, which you have to drink the potion, essentially, to prime the spawn of Satan. Spoiler alert. Is this kind of concept with the blood that his body needs to be primed and ready for assumingly Isaiah to either like being John Malkovich jump into his body and take over, or maybe this kid will take on the soul of the devil. We don't fucking know because they don't fucking know because it never gets anywhere with that. And it goes nowhere. There's no element of the blood that poisons him and controls his body to where he can't prevent his own signature sort of thing that he has to fight against his own Jesus and devil temptation. None of that. The fact of the trickery with some of the elements, like the concussion guy, remember when he's throwing the football at all the guys and he's got that mask? It's one of Marlon Wayne's best scenes where he's like, what are you willing to sacrifice? As he shakes him while he's had like his head in the helmet. And then we see somebody go to throw the ball and somebody clocks him dead in the head. And it's a painful scene, only for it to flip and trick us because we, as it had been framed, are convinced Cam's throwing the football. So he just got hit really bad and collapsed. But then Cam's the guy who hit him. Who the fuck's this other guy? Why did his head not hurt from doing the head-on collision? Why would he risk that? Why is he not throwing the ball? That was just a complete red herring flip for a moment of shock.
I think some of that has to do with what it goes into the theme. What are you willing to do?
But I'm saying from a logical of the scene building.
Yes, that's okay. So I get what you're saying. And this is the problem with a movie like this. Because logic doesn't always need to be a part of these particular moments.
But it still has to make sense within the weird.
So narrative logic.
Narrative logic. Black Swan, there are moments that don't make fucking sense. Natalie Portman sees herself as she walks down the hallway. She has bird legs.
But that's narrative logic. But
narratively, the logic is fucking there.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
And in this, the narrative logic is absent or only barely touched on. How do the fanatics get into his house to where they can climb under the sauna to threaten to kill Cam? Is this not a locked down place with 30 some odd people walking around at all times?
It's a compound. Yeah, I'm assuming that Isaiah and his group of demons, whatever they are, allowed them to enter so that he can be tempted to murder them. He wanted Cade to murder them.
Maybe, but we're filling in the blanks.
Correct.
Where, again, there's no narrative logic for this to be a thing. And again, they later go to the field to shoot.
I mean, it's. I will say, in the defense of this movie, it's messy, but it is clear they're trying to morally compromise them. There's a moment where they go out to the desert and they're shooting targets, and he purposely has him shoot a mascot that he doesn't know is an actual live being, a human being that's breathing.
Yeah.
So they are trying to morally compromise
him. But that never goes anywhere.
In order to take on this mantle or the blood that is continually.
But would it not have been, and again, this is where I'm saying it had to be rewritten. Would it not have been better had he accidentally killed this girl? And then it's like, you can't tell anyone. You want to end your career right now and have the news find out? No, we got to bury her in the desert kind of thing. And more steps that compromise his very soul. No, he doesn't kill her. Isaiah does. Or some other person is in the mascot suit and gets shot, and it's never seen or brought up again.
I think that's my biggest problem, is nothing is
nothing matters.
Even when it should be clarified, because we just saw it, there is no clarification.
Correct.
We're just left
now, with a lot of humming and hawing. And I guess maybe this was what that was supposed to be.
A lot of David Lynch films will do stuff like this. However, this is the difference. So
they come together at the end.
Yeah. You took the words.
Sorry. I thought you were going to have him wearing.
No, because he does a lot of those things that leave you.
Mulholland Drive.
There isn't clarification. You're like, oh, this is frustrating. Oh, this is frustrating.
Yes.
Oh, this is frustrating. And then before the end of the movie, all those moments where we needed clarification are brought together in some grand clarifying moment. Well, and where you're like,
that's okay. The beauty of Mulholland Drive. Spoiler alert. I was watching that movie, and for most of the movie, I'm sitting there like, what the fuck is this? What is this scene? How is this relevant? And then by the end, with the big ending scenes, the couple that there are, it hit me like a train. And I was like, holy fuck, this all makes sense now. That's incredibly well done.
Well, that's a great movie, and David Lynch is a genius.
And that's the difference. And this is, again, where
this goes right back to how we started the show.
This wants to be with Mulholland Drive and Black Swan and Whiplash.
And even some of Jordan Peele's better films.
Get Out.
Get Out.
There's a lot of similarities
in that. Better film? Film? Or films.
Better film. There's a lot of similarities in that, but this doesn't have. It has the ingredients, but not the chef to make it work.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's the problem with this movie.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I have opposing views on certain things, but I think overall we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, I think so. It's disappointing because I do think this is an interesting concept that has kind of been squandered.
Yeah, the trailer made it look like this epic mindfuck.
Dude.
And that's what I was disappointed with.
Honestly, watch the trailer and imagine your own movie and it'll be better.
Wow.
I'm dead serious, dude. Tell me you couldn't.
Yeah. No, I get it.
Like, the allure of the trailer and what this movie could have been is stronger than what is on screen. And so in that respect, I would say, yeah, just watch the trailer, imagine what'll happen, and call it a good night out and save yourself the ticket price. So, again, if you're really into football, if you're really into these kind of movies, the psychological horror stuff, you may not hate your time with it, but I wouldn't say anyone would hate their time with this. What I would say is you will not be satisfied.
You know what you should do?
Mm.
Wait for it to come to streaming.
There you go.
Get high.
Oh, that, yeah. Yep.
And it would probably be really fucking fun. It's that type of movie.
It really is. That shit. Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah. I just fixed it for everyone.
There you go. There you go, Mike. See, just as we're tearing it down, we've given it new life.
Cognitively dead, basically.
Well, and the thing is, too, if you watch, I'm watching a trailer right now play from IMDb. There are multiple scenes that were cut that would have made certain scenes better.
Oh, really?
Right now, they had a whole scene with he goes and pulls up the mascot person to see who it is that he shot. And he's terrified looking, and it's himself. And he's having this like psychological break scene. Where was that? The part where he's in the hallway and he's getting suffocated with the plastic wrap. They have sports cast newscasters asking him questions as he's choking to death. Like, this is ideas that are a little bit more deep and nuanced and could have gone somewhere.
Yeah.
Cut from the movie.
Yep.
So maybe the editor fucked him. I don't know.
Who knows?
So with that, though, yeah, that'll probably be it for him. I think, unfortunately, if you haven't seen it, Weapons is going to outplay this by a wide margin.
And that's probably another thing, is that the summer had some pretty solid summer horror films.
Yeah.
And for this movie to be the follow-up, that I do feel like it's going to disappoint a lot of people.
Yeah. You have to beat The Conjuring number 4, which isn't the best number to be in any series, but, I mean, you still got 4 of them. And Weapons. And even, what was it? Final Destination Bloodlines. And that one was ridiculous. At least I enjoyed myself watching it. So, but that'll do it here for us at Critique Revolve. Let us know what you think. And as always, thank you for listening.
Hello, very nice to meet you. I'd like to know about sex change operations.
I see.
Cut. No good for sound.
Well, fucking hell, Lloyd.
Man, game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
We're going, we don't need roads.
I'll be back.